Welcome to the Everyday Ultra Podcast, a show designed to help you level up your training, crush your races, and ultimately become a better endurance athlete every single day. Whether you're an endurance athlete as a hobby or someone who wants to be the best in the sport, this is the show for you. I'm your host, Joe Corcione, and thank you so much for listening. Now, let's get into it. What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the Everyday Ultra Podcast. I'm your host, Joe Corcione, and today we're talking all about climbing, baby. We're talking all about uphill running, getting in that vert or vertical gain, as all of us in the trail community love to say. But we're talking all about uphill running, and this is a very requested topic that I get asked a lot as not only a podcast host, but also as a coach from athletes who are coming to me looking to train for a pretty hilly race. So we're going to dive all into how to improve your uphill running, how to best train for uphill ultras, how to avoid a lot of mistakes that people make when they are training for a race with a lot of uphill or training to be a better uphill athlete in the end of the day, and how you can structure your training to ultimately turn yourself into a mountain goat or a climbing machine or insert any type of other awesome adjective for climbing well. We're going to talk about how to do that all in here, which is super cool. Now, before we dive into all the tips and the strategies and everything like that, because the show is called Everyday Ultra, I always like to share game-changing tools and tricks in my training that have been really, really monumental. And for me, as I've been training up for the Cocodona 250, which is about a week and a half away, which is crazy, I've been putting in tons of volume, a lot of climbing, a lot of time on my feet. And generally, when it comes to increasing volume, it's usually a little rougher on our muscles. And whether we're in training or even in the middle of an ultra marathon where, you know, we're mile 70 in a 100-mile race or mile 26 in a 50K, like there are times where our legs can feel pretty sore. And when our legs are sore, they don't operate as well, they don't fire as well, they don't carry us as long. And I have, for years and years and years, had looked for best ways to combat having sore muscles out there. Now, the number one way to do so is by good training. You train your muscles to be less sore, they're going to work. But let's face it, on long runs and also on races, they can still get sore. So that's why I've been using this game-changing tool called PlayOn Pain Relief Spray, which is an all-natural topical relief spray, which comes in a pretty easy-to-carry bottle that you can put in your vest. And all you do is you spray it on your legs wherever are sore, whether it's your quads, calves, ankles, anywhere of the such. And what it does is it not only cools the top layer of the skin, but it actually goes deeper into your muscles, into your joints, and targets the inflammation at the source to rid soreness in a matter of seconds. And what's super cool is it's more effective than a CBD cream or Icy Hot or BioFreeze, because instead of just cooling the top of the skin like all those things I mentioned do, it actually goes deep into the surface and targets the inflammation at the source. So this thing has been monumental in my training. I haven't been sore once at Cocodona. I've used it on all my races leading up to it, and I'm telling you, in the later half of the races, it has helped me to not only reduce soreness but have my muscles performing at their best abilities to do well at those races. And because PlayOn's been such a game-changing product for me, their founders are giving you a 20% discount on PlayOn if you'd like to try it out. It's a super affordable product too, less than 30 bucks after the discount, so super easy to use, and it'll last you for a while as well. And you can get your bottle of PlayOn by going to playonrelief.com using code EverydayUltra at checkout for 20% off your order. That's going to playonrelief.com using code EverydayUltra at checkout for 20% off your order. Hope you give it a try, and play on, everybody. All right, now let's get into incline training. So why is training for uphills so important? Well, if you look at a lot of ultra marathons, for the most part, I'm not saying this is a blanket statement because there's ultra marathons that are also very, very flat, but a lot of ultra marathons will have some sort of elevation gain, whether it's rolling hills, whether it's steep hills, whether the entire thing is a hill. Yes, there's a race here in Arizona that is literally a 50K that's pretty much all uphill except for the last 2 miles, which is crazy. But a lot of ultra marathons do have climbing in them. And climbing is a really tricky thing because I'm sure that you know, like, I remember the first time when I was climbing in my training, when I really started to get into running, like, it's a really weird experience because you start going up the incline, right? You may be starting on a flat ground and you're running up, and then you try to run up the hill, and all of a sudden, like, you start breathing a lot heavier, and all of a sudden the legs start to get heavier, and it's just a much, much more difficult kind of feeling. running uphill is, and this is the obvious thing, is way harder than running on flat ground and downhill. And that's just because it's going uphill, your body's working a lot harder, you're activating more muscular strength in your legs to carry you uphill, you're going against gravity. Like, there's just a lot of things that are putting resistance in the way from you, you know, going as fast as you would be going on the downhills or the flats. Now, a lot of the times it can be so easy to think about and being like, oh, like climbing, man, is it always going to feel this hard, or is it always going to feel this difficult? And I would say nay, my friends. I used to think, you know, when I first started to get into ultra running, that like climbing was always going to be super hard, and that, you know, you couldn't, you know, it was really hard to make it feel easy, or, you know, climb up a hill without being super winded. But, you know, over my years of training in ultra marathons and studying how to best train for ultra marathons and working with, you know, tons and tons of athletes on how to be better climbers as well, there is a tried and true process to not only climb up the hills a lot stronger, but also how to get faster climbing uphill, also how to conserve energy climbing uphill, and ultimately turning yourself into a mountain goat so that if you go into a race, you don't have to dread the climbs, but you actually get stoked for the climbs, because it's an area that not only, I mean, it's harder than flat ground and downhills for everybody, but I also think it's one of the areas that is most mistakenly trained for. And I'll go through what the biggest mistakes that people make when they're training for to be a better uphill runner, and how you can avoid those mistakes, and what you can do instead to really optimize your training to be a better uphill athlete. So we're going to go through that in here as well. And listen, even if you're living in a flat area, right? Even if you're listening in Florida, or you're listening in, you know, the Midwest, and there's not a lot of, you know, hills around you, I will tell you that there is a way to train for an uphill race. I actually have an athlete on my team who I'm coaching, who he is training for a very hilly ultra, Georgia Jewel, and he lives in Florida, and he is getting in a ton of incline training. And I will tell you how as well. And this is also not just specific to my athletes, but if you look at Tara Dower, she was a top 10 ultra runner of the year last year. She just, she has, you know, done really, really well at a lot of ultras with vertical gain. She has the FKT on the Colorado Trail, and she lives in an area that's extremely flat with barely any elevation gain at all. And we'll talk about how she does it in here so you can do this as well. So if you live in a flat area and you want to, you know, race something like Leadville 100 or a really hilly race, and you're like, I don't know if I can train for this thing, I'm here to tell you that number one, you can, and two, here's how to do it. And if you live in an area with a lot of mountains, then good on you, because then that's going to be a great playground for you to dive into. So we're going to talk about how to improve your uphill running. Now, first and foremost, I always like to start off with the mistakes that people make when training for uphills, because I think why a lot of people don't see meaningful progress in uphill running is because there's a lot of things that are done wrong in uphill running training that can be easily fixed that I'll talk about on here first. So the first thing is, I truly believe that people climb too much when they should be focused on something else. They climb too much when they be focused on something else. And what do I mean by that, right? So a lot of the times, right? I mean, think about with anything in life. With anything in life, like, what's the best way to get better at the thing? It's to do the thing, right? Of course it is, to do the thing. Now, climbing is an interesting thing because there's really two aspects of the climbing thing, right? There's two aspects. There's the actual biomechanical motion of climbing uphill. Like, there is like the physiological movements that you're making in your legs, the turnover, hiking strategies, all those kind of things as well. But just as is a focus with uphill, flat running, downhill running, there's also the aerobic part of it as well, right? And when we go up a hill, our aerobic system is going to be taxed a lot more, and you can actually breathe really hard to get into the anaerobic system as well. So instead of just focusing on just adding a ton of vertical gain, which I'm not saying is a bad thing, and I'm not saying you should cut out vertical training, there is a question that you can ask yourself to decide, should I be ramping up my climbing right off the gate early into my training block, or should I be focused on something else and then maybe start to sprinkle in the climbing a little later into the training block? Now, again, I'm not saying take down the climbing. I'm not saying don't climb as much. I'm just saying a lot of people focus way too much on the climbing when there's a bigger bang for your buck that you can get that's going to make you a better, not only uphill athlete, but athlete in general when you are training for an ultra marathon. And I'll talk about that in a second. So I think people put too much emphasis or they jump right to the conclusion of, I just need to get in as much vertical gain as possible. When in reality, there might be another solution that's going to be much more effective without having to get in an absurd amount of vertical gain, which I'll talk about. Now I'm being cryptic on that because like I will talk about that on how to train for it. And I don't want to spill the beans on that, but I'll put that there as the first thing. The second mistake that people make is that they ramp up vertical gain way too quickly. So just as the same, like for example, if you have gone through 3 weeks of zero running, you probably wouldn't go into a fourth week and just ramp up 100 miles off the bat or ramp up running 90 miles a week right off the bat. Why? Because a lot of people know that if you just ramp mileage up way too quickly, you're ultimately going to risk injury significantly, right? The same thing actually goes true with vertical gain. So vertical gain, like if you think about it, when you're climbing uphill, you're activating different muscles, you're putting a little bit more strain on your body, that's going to be different than running downhill and uphill. And if you just go from like running, let's just say you're running, you know, 60 to 70 miles a week and you're doing it all on flat. And then all of a sudden you just, you know, you're still running 60 to 70 miles a week. And now you're increasing your vertical gain per week by 20,000, right? I'm just using arbitrary examples. That's going to be a significant strain on the body that you're adding on because now you're just adding in new impact into your muscles like that are not used to going through those things. And that in and itself can actually lead to injury too. And here's the other thing as well, 70 miles on flat, like assuming that you're going at the same effort like at each of those things, 70 miles on flat versus 70 miles and 20,000 feet of elevation gain is going to lead to increased load on your body. And I talk about this on the podcast all the time. Like, don't look at a matter of your load on your body as a matter of miles. Look at it as a matter of time on feet. Now, I use that miles example to kind of paint the picture here, but when you're looking at your training, it's best to look at the overall time on feet that you're getting. So for example, like, you know, you're looking at, hey, this week I'm going to be running 9 hours a week. And then next week I'm going to be running 10 hours a week, right? So on and so forth. Like you're looking at an hours and not the miles spent. It is still important to look at the mileage and it is still important to look at the vertical gain that you're getting in. However, that's not going to be the sole determinant of your training in terms of the optimal way to do so. I'm not saying you have to do that, but from an ultra marathon perspective, it is really important. And one of the really important ways, one of the reasons why it's so important is because, like I said before, 70 miles on flat versus 70 miles with 20,000 feet of climbing in a week is going to be way significantly different in terms of the time that you're going to have on your feet and the load that you're going to have on your body. So when you train as opposed to miles and you train on time on feet instead, it normalizes that in a way where you're putting your load on the body in a way that ramps it up safely and has it in a way where you're going to stay in the game. Because even if you put a lot of vertical gain in there, if you're injured, it doesn't matter because if you're not going to make it to that start line healthy. Now I go through a lot of this stuff in terms of like training on time and all that stuff as well in all the other podcasts, so we won't cover it on here. But the thing is, you want to ramp up a vertical gain in a way that's gradual as well. So if you are used to going on zero elevation per week, I would ramp that up in a very safe way relative to where you're going to be at. So I'll talk about the safe way on how to ramp it into your training as well so that you're not like going like, you know, totally batshit crazy with the vert off the bat. And you're also not going to be doing it in an arbitrary number. You're actually going to be doing it on a number that's very course specific for you for the race that you're training in, which goes into mistake number three. Mistake number three is people just don't study the course that they are training for and they don't train for the vert in the right way. So I'll give you an example. Let's just take a look at two different ultra marathons, right? So let's just say that there's one ultra marathon that has 10,000 feet of gain over the course of 50 miles. And then we have another ultra marathon, same mileage and same elevation gain. But if we look at race A, it basically, the whole race is you go uphill and then downhill and then uphill and then downhill. So basically there's two 5,000 foot massive climbs in this race. Whereas if you look at race B is very rolling hills. It's very rolling hills, right? So Those are two very, very different kind of races as well. And even just to add even more variation into it, let's just say there's race C, again, 50 miles with 10,000 feet of elevation gain. Let's just say this one has climbs, but then it has a lot of flat sections, then it has a climb and then a flat section. And so there's three races that have three incredibly different kinds of ways to train for uphill that are going to be different kind of modalities in there as well. And so what I mean by that is, like, if you're just training on like rolling hills all the time, you know, for race A, where it has a one big continuous climb, it might be a little bit of a shock on race day when you're just straight climbing for miles and miles on end, versus like when you're doing a rolling hill kind of strategy where, you know, you're going up and then down and up and then down and up and then down and kind of switching those things, you know, as much as you can. So that is just something that I think is really, really important, is know the uphill that you have to be training for. And the easiest way to do that is look at the race that you are targeting, go to the website and find the course profile. Pretty much most ultra marathons will have the course profile of the race that you were training for. Not all, like, it's actually surprising, like, some of them don't have that on there, but you can generally find it online if you do try and find it. But that is going to be a good way to kind of think about, like, so Cocodona is the race that I'm training for. I'll give you an example. A lot of the incline comes in, there's a lot of sections that are very flat and runnable. And then there's a lot of like concentrated uphill climbs. So a lot of the climbs are very concentrated and steep. So therefore, when I'm looking at a lot of my terrain that I'm training for, I'm going for more of like the steep stuff, but also with a mixture of flat running in my training as well. So I can focus on, you know, really, really adapting to that type of race style. Whereas like if I'm training for Ouray 100 after Cocodona, and Ouray is basically up, down, up, down, up, down for 100 miles with 42,000 feet of elevation gain. What I'm going to be doing to train for that for my long runs is just going up and down and up and down and up and down, and probably not a lot of flat running at all on my, I shouldn't say at all, but not a lot of flat running prioritized as much as I would for Cocodona as well. Because knowing that you have to climb up a mountain after running on flats is going to be a way different experience than doing up, down, up, down, up, down, again, because you're switching the different types of modalities. So a mistake that people make is like they don't study the course and they train for the wrong type of vert. And ultimately, it's kind of like a shell shock on race day when they go through there as well. And I'll give you like a really, really good way to kind of do that in your long run so that you go into there as well. Now, the other mistake that people make is people simply just run too hard uphill. You run too hard uphill. And I'll go into why this is very tough. And so this kind of goes into that first point on how to best train for uphill. And I'll talk about that in a second. But when you run uphill, it's nearly impossible. I shouldn't say impossible, but it's pretty unlikely that if you are running at the same effort on flats and if you run at that same effort uphill, like, you're going to have the same exact pace. Like, actually, I would pretty much deem that it's impossible. So what I mean by that is if you're running at a 10 minute per mile on flats and then you go and you try and run that 10 minute per mile, same thing on the uphill, like, you are exerting a lot more energy and effort. So therefore, you're going to be breathing a lot more. And sometimes people will try and overcompensate the pace a little bit by trying to run a little bit hard uphill when in reality, you need to learn to take it down a little bit or not run at all, which I'll talk about in a second. But running too hard uphill can actually confuse your body and ultimately not make the adaptations it needs to carry the longer distance that you are training for in an ultra marathon as well. Because, you know, it's just like the similar thing that is just a key hallmark principle of ultra marathon training is that you run your easy runs easy and you run your hard runs hard. And usually when you're training for an uphill, outside of interval workouts, which we'll talk about, but I'm talking more so like on long runs and runs that are supposed to be easy, and there is incline involved in that, you know, people will actually go from easy running on the flat and the downhill, and then they'll go to an uphill, try to overcompensate for it, and then they will just huff and puff, and now they're in the anaerobic zone, and it kind of defeats the purpose of the easy runs. You don't show up recovered as well. I'll talk about that a little bit more in that as well, but people just run a little bit too hard uphill. So I think that's another mistake that people make. Two more mistakes real quickly. One mistake is that people don't practice hiking enough. Don't practice hiking enough because, you know, when there's a lot of uphill in the race, like the chances, unless it's like really rolling and smooth, buttery terrain, like the chances of, you know, people running every single uphill in a race is slim to none. And so unless you're like a super duper elite athlete. But even so, like, I know a lot of like very super duper elite athletes who, you know, they will hike, you know, some uphills, even on like a pretty runnable uphill course. So, people don't practice the skill of hiking enough, because that is a skill, and it's a skill that's very different at running. You know, by becoming a better runner doesn't necessarily always make you a better hiker, because hiking is such like a different kind of mechanic. It's such a different kind of muscle movements that you're using out there and everything like that too. And there's a technique and a strategy to lean into that, that hiking ability, where it can really, really benefit you a lot more in an ultra marathon than, if you weren't to practice it at all. So I always say like getting some hiking practice can be super, super beneficial. And I'll talk about how to effectively add that into your training as well. Now, the last mistake that people make, and this is a very, very big, big mistake that people make, is that, you know, uphill is a great thing too, but sometimes people don't focus on the downhill as much. People don't focus on the downhill as much. And that's like a very, very big thing, because yes, climbing feels hard. Your legs can feel like they're, you know, burning up, and you feel like you're breathing really heavy. And the downhill seems super, super easy, right? You just let your legs take you. You just cruise down. You don't have to put in too much effort. But here's the reality. Most of the muscular damage that comes from a hilly ultra marathon doesn't come from the flat running, and it doesn't come from the uphill. Most of it actually comes from the downhill running. And the reason why that is because in the downhill running, you are exerting way more of your force back into your body. When you're running on flat ground, about 2 times your body weight is being radiated back into your musculoskeletal system with every step that you are taking. So think about that. That's a lot of weight that's coming right back at you. When you're going downhill, like, you are now increasing that, so more impact is coming back to your body, back into your muscles, back into your joints, back into your bones, like all those kind of things as well. So it's way harder on the body. And uphill, from that perspective, is actually a lot easier, because think about it. You're going uphill at this point, and you're kind of like pitter-pattering up, like you're not really clomping uphill, and you know, you're being a little softer on your feet going uphill, and maybe you're moving a little bit slower. Uphill is actually, from a musculoskeletal standpoint, is actually going to be a little kinder on your body from an impact perspective than running on flats, and then also most of all the downhills. So downhill is something that you want to be able to put into your training as well, and I think people don't focus on that as much, and they sacrifice it by saying, I need to get in as much vert as possible. But with most races, not all races, but most races with uphill, there's probably going to be a lot of downhill as well, unless you're doing that race that I mentioned before. It's called Crown King Scramble, by the way. It's an amazing race. 6,000 feet of climbing over 50K, but there's only a tiny bit of downhill, which is, it's a super fun race. But most races with a lot of uphill, you're going to get a lot of downhill as well. And even in some races, you're going to get a net downhill. Black Canyon 100K is a great example. Cane's 100K, which has happened this weekend. Great example. Western States 100, net downhill course. Very, very interesting to see on there as well. So being that, you know, you also want to focus on the downhill in your training as well, and not just the uphill too. So those are the big mistakes that people make when they are trying to improve their uphill running. Now let's talk about how you can effectively train to be a better uphill athlete when you are training for an ultra marathon that has a lot of hills in there, or you just want to be a better uphill athlete in general. Now, before we get into the techniques and everything like that, there's the most important thing that I like to say on here, and I talk about this on the podcast a lot, but it is just a great reminder to have in here, is if you have a label on yourself saying, I am not a good uphill runner, or I am a flat runner, or I am not good at the climbs, or I suck at climbing. Like, if you have any of these labels on your, you know, head, like, destroy those labels right away. Because here's the reality. If you consider yourself someone who isn't great as climbing, or someone who is more of a flat runner, or someone who isn't really a mountain person, or anything like that, guess what? Your brain's going to perpetuate that belief into reality. And when it gets hard, I'm not going to always say, you know, if it gets hard, but when it gets hard, when you're training for these things, you don't want your brain to be like, see, you suck at climbing, or see, you're not great at climbing. Because the reality is, if you believe that to be true, beliefs are so programmed, and labels and identities especially, right? Because, like, think about it. If you tell yourself you're not great at climbing, that's a part of your identity. And one of the biggest forces in human nature is our dire and innate need to stay consistent with who we say we are. So if we tell ourselves that we are not a great climber, like our brain is going to try and find the ways to justify that by pointing it out when we're huffing and puffing on these climbs, and it's going to be harder for us to make the progress in there as well. So there's a whole way where you can break negative beliefs and everything, and I talk about this on a recent podcast if you want to really work in the belief department, because this one's going to be more on like the areas of more in the areas of like the training and stuff. So if you listen to the episode called The Running Mental Shift to Achieve Any Ultra Running or Running Goal, it'll go through the whole process on how you can shatter, you know, negative beliefs and labels that are holding you back. But in the meantime, what I want to say is, like, even let's just say in reality, on paper, you're not good at climbing or you're not good at those things. Instead of just blanketly saying, I'm not good at climbing or I'm not a mountain runner, add this powerful word to the end of that statement. I'm not a good mountain climber yet. I'm not good at running up hills yet. I'm not good at vertical training yet. Add the yet at the end of that, because when you add the yet at the end of it, it's like, oh, that implies you can get better and you will get better as long as you're willing to put in the work and believe that you can get there and you're willing to learn along the way. Now, that doesn't mean the first times that you go out and you do your incline training that you are going to turn into the next Killian Jornet. It doesn't mean you're going to turn into Courtney DeWalter, like prancing down UTMB. Like, no, absolutely not. But what it does is it opens up the possibility for you to learn on how you can improve to be really good at climbing uphill and conquering the mountains so that you expand those things in there. So again, I can give you all the tips and the strategies, and I will, and that's what this episode's for, but I always like to mention that in there because I see this a lot, and honestly, I was the same way. Like, before I trained for Canyons 100K, which is a very, very hilly race, I was mostly doing flat-ish races, and I remember going into, like, that training block being like, I'm a flat runner, like, this is gonna be out of my comfort zone, and blah, 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 and it was out of my comfort zone, I'm not gonna lie into that, but, you know, I came into that came into the training block initially being like, I'm not like a good climber or anything like that. And before I even like started my first run, I said, you know what? Like, I'm not a good climber yet. I'm going to learn. I'm going to get better. And I truly believe I can. And that's the human element. And so I think remind yourself too, like if something that's going to really, really help on there as well. And again, I encourage you to listen to the podcast that I did on this, but if you... The best way to understand that this principle is true is think about how far you've come as an ultra runner or any area of your life where you had to become that person. So like for me, for example, I have no running background. I didn't run in high school. I didn't run in college. I actually ran years after college. I have no athletic background. And, you know, I built myself into someone who can run multiple 100 milers, placing top 10 in a very competitive 100 miler, right? Like now training for a 250 mile race. And it's like, fuck, if I can go through and do that, then yes, I can go through and definitely learn how to be a big climber. And think about those things in your life, whether it is an ultra running example where you're like, hey, like, you know, I ran a 50 miler and I thought at one time that was going to be impossible. Or, you know, it doesn't have to be the ultra running thing. It can be, wow, I thought that like I wouldn't be able to like land this dream job and I totally did. Or I didn't think I'd be able to like marry the person of my dreams and like here I am, right? Whatever those things are, like think about those examples where you became something and that can help to justify it over the edge. Okay, so enough about belief. Let's talk about like the actual like nitty gritty training principles on how to increase or how to improve your climbing and train for uphill ultras. So the most important question that you want to ask yourself, let's just say, hey, I'm not good at climbing yet. Didn't think I was going to leave that yet out. Come on. Come on. We're not leaving that yet out. I'm not good at climbing yet, or I'm not good at training for uphills. Or you just say, I want to improve my uphill running, right? If you come to that, the first question that I like to ask athletes who come to me with this, or this is a question that you should ask yourself, or even I ask myself, like when I'm thinking about like my own stuff, is this question. When you run uphill, do you tire it out first in your lungs or your legs? I'll say that again. When you run uphill, do you tire out first in your lungs or your legs? And what I mean by that is, do you feel like your breathing is getting a little bit more out of control and that's the thing that's holding you back first? Or do you get that feeling where your legs start to like really like, you know, get heavy, it start to get tight, like they're not be able to push? Like, do you feel like that's the first thing to go? And if you're unsure, a really great way to test this out is just go for a run where you do have some climbing in there and just notice which one gives out first. Is it your lungs or is it your legs? And so that's a big question that generally I like to ask a lot of athletes, because that relates to that first mistake that I say people make is, you know, people focus way too much on the actual vert itself. Because if you answer that question and you say that you tire out in the lungs first, and now we are making the assumption with this answer, though, that you are genuinely trying to run these at an easy intensity and like you're not running too fast, because sometimes people might say, yeah, I tired out in the lungs, but they're running a little too fast. Assuming that they're running at the right intensity, or maybe they're power hiking up and their lungs just tire out, it's not a matter of, are you good at climbing? It's not a matter of this. What's the bigger focus here is you... really, your biggest bang for your buck here is to just increase your aerobic fitness. Increase your aerobic fitness. Yes. And guess what? To increase your aerobic fitness, what do? You run easier. You run easier. And that doesn't mean you have to run easier on uphills. It just means you have to run easier on general. So a lot of the times when people say, I want to get better at climbing, it might just be a matter of you maybe needing to increase your aerobic fitness a little bit, which is like, I know can sound like a little harsh. I think it's like, what the fuck? I am fit. Like, what the heck? But in the end of the day, like sometimes, you know, and I believe this true for anything, like anything in ultra marathon training, no matter what race you're training for, no matter what distance you're training for, the number one thing, when I look at anything above all, when you look at any kind of training program, when you look at any kind of focus, the number one thing that you have to work on before absolutely anything else, technical trail running, footing, downhill, uphill, whatever, heat training, altitude, any, like before you even get to any of those things, the number one thing that is going to be an absolute must when it comes to training for an ultra marathon is having a good aerobic base and being as fit as you possibly can. Your fitness, right? And I always say this on the podcast, fitness is king. So the reality is, the fitter that you are, even if you never step foot on an uphill, even if you never step foot on an uphill, the fitter you are, the better you're going to be at uphill climbing. Because when you have a bigger aerobic base, you're able to process oxygen a lot more efficiently at a lower intensity. So therefore, you can go up uphills at a lower intensity, a lot more sustainable, and your breathing's going to be able to sustain you a lot more. Now, at that point, it's likely going to be your legs that are going to hold you back. But the reality is, that's an easy fix relative to, I want to say the aerobic fitness isn't an easy fix, but like that's another thing that you can go on to as well. But the problem is, like, you're more likely to not get through the race if your lungs are crapping out first before your legs. Because I think we've all had the feeling, like, it's easier to push and run harder on dead legs than it is to push and run harder when you're gasping for air, right? Because the air is the fuel that keeps us going. And so you want to focus on your fitness first. So if you're just focusing, or if you're just like struggling on just keeping your breath, even if you're hiking up the hill, or, you know, it's just, you just can't keep control of your breath, it's a matter of building the aerobic fitness. Now, the beauty of this is that you don't have to run uphill to do this. You don't have to run uphill to do this. You just simply have to run easy miles. And a lot of your training, like in the early forefront of your training block, should be just building easy, low intensity miles. And when I say easy, low intensity miles, I mean conversational pace. You should be able to talk. You should be able to feel like you can go for long periods of time. It's going to feel slow, and it should feel slow, because the slow miles help to build your aerobic fitness, right? So when you do that, that's going to help you to allow you to go for longer periods of time and have a bigger base and also go uphill stronger. What was super crazy to me, I will never forget this experience, but I trained so hard for Javelina 100 in 2022. So 2022, I basically took from May of 2022 that year up to October, and all I did like a few races and I did like a few other stuff as well. But like my whole thing was like, I made that training for Javelina 100. And basically a lot of the work that I did in that time was like, I did just a lot of easy mileage on flat ground, because Javelina, it's not a very hilly course. Like it's not really a hilly course at all. There's 5,000 feet of climbing over 100 miles, which isn't nothing, but it's really runnable. It's just like one, like really steady, like, and I mean like, I don't want to say climb, but I want to say like steady incline where you're not really climbing. Like you're just, you know, more so just going a little bit uphill, but regardless, it's a pretty flat race. But I was training mostly on just flat ground and everything like that. And then, so I did that race, finished top 10 male, which was amazing. And then after that, I did Black Canyon, which has some climbing. So I added in a little bit more vertical gain into it. But when I was doing the vertical gain section, I thought to myself, I was like, oh man, like I haven't been practicing climbing in a while, and this is wild and blah, blah, blah. And like, I don't know, it might be harder. And I remember the first time like I did an uphill run, and I remember I was blazing up as best as I've ever done in my entire life going up this hill. And I had barely even ran like a lick of like uphills like in a while too. And it was so mind blowing to me. It was like, oh my gosh, like I haven't ran uphill in a while and I'm like smoking up this mountain right now. Like this is wild. And that's when it hit me. And it was like, yeah, it's because I spent all this time just getting incredibly fit. So fit, like just like building like this fitness and everything like that. And that helped me to be a better climber. Now, of course, like where my limiting factor was at that point was like my legs started to get a little bit tired. And that's where you start to, and I'm alluding to like the answer, if it's the legs, like that's where you do want to climb more. But in the reality, in the end of the day, when some people say like, yeah, my lungs are the things that tire up more and they think they need to climb uphill, the problem is, going back to what I was mentioning before, is if like your lungs are tiring out and you're like, my solution is to get better at climbing by climbing, and you climb all these things, when you're climbing up, you're not in that easy intensity. You're breathing really heavy, and now you're in the anaerobic thing, in the anaerobic zone. And when you're in the anaerobic zone, and just to kind of give a refresher for those who aren't familiar, aerobic is low intensity. That's low intensity oxygen production in your body. And anaerobic is high intensity, shorter duration oxygen production in your body as well. And so anaerobic, like think about it, is really short duration. So you can, depending on how intense you're going, like you can hold the anaerobic from theoretically anywhere between like 90 minutes to, you know, depending on how fast you're going, 12 minutes, 5 minutes, even 1 minute, right? Whereas your aerobic system, you can maintain for hours and hours and hours on end. And when it comes to an ultramarathon, obviously you're going hours and hours on end, so you want to build the aerobic system. And the best way to build both of those systems is to train those systems. Now, knowing all that, if you are going uphill and you are bleeding into the anaerobic zone and you're like, I need to climb as much as possible, now you're spending a lot of time into the anaerobic zone. And again, not saying that that's a benefit and that's not going to help you, but the problem is people do that on their easy runs. And listen, I'm not knocking doing anaerobic work because I do think it's important and a crucial part of uphill training, which I'll talk about in this podcast, because you do also need to train the anaerobic to train the aerobic as well. And I'll talk about that in a second. But the point is when you're running really hard up these hills on runs that are supposed to be easy, you are now in the anaerobic zone. And ultimately, you are not focusing on what you're trying to do in that workout, which is build the aerobic fitness, because now you're confusing your body, because now you go from aerobic to anaerobic to aerobic to anaerobic. And the best way to stress the aerobic system is to be in that aerobic system for a longer period of time. So just know that like that is the conundrum that people get into, is like, I need to climb a lot because I breathe really hard on these uphills, but they never really make progress. And they even feel like they're getting worse at climbing. It's because like you're not building that aerobic zone as much. So just know that like that is a crucial question to ask yourself. And if the answer is it's on the lungs, then you need to focus more on building aerobic fitness. And that's going to help you to ultimately be fitter so you can get up the climb as well. Now, I'm not saying don't focus on climbing at all. I'm just saying focus on terrain or an intensity that you can maintain in honest aerobic pace up the things as well. And honestly, that you can still include incline. You can still include incline, but if that means like hiking uphill to maintain that aerobic fitness, you're gonna be hiking up those hills, right? So just know that like whatever you need to do, whether it's flat running or whether it's hiking uphill, whatever those things are, like doing what you can to just get fit, focus on fitness from the vert. And then once you get closer to the race and you do build that fitness, then you can start adding in the vert later into the program. Now, if you come to me and say, hey, the fitness is good, but my legs are getting tired, then guess what? Giddy up, son, because now you're going to be, you know, jumping into the vert. That's the answer. That's like, okay, now we're going to add in the vert. Now, generally, when you're looking at a training block, or you're looking at a training period for a race, right? Let's just say you have 18 weeks to train for your next ultra. You know, with it, you always want to focus on your weaknesses first and your strengths later. So if one of your weaknesses is climbing and you want to get better at climbing, and assuming that your legs are the thing that's going to crap out first, and assuming that you don't need to build this aerobic conditioning period, then you can focus that initial thing, especially on those easy runs and those long runs, on adding in vertical gain. Right? So your long runs, you're doing it on hilly terrain, you're going through all these things as well. And then that's going to be able to be the focus, because the more that you get the incline on your legs, the better. Now, I'll talk about the way to put that in a lot safely. So you just make sure you're not spiking it into there. But that's going to be where you can have that incline in there as well. So early on, if you're aerobically fit, and you really need to work on the uphills, then you're going to be focusing on vert right off the bat. Again, not saying you can't do it if it's the lungs, but you want to make sure you're doing it at an easy intensity to do so as well. Now, let's talk about how to add vertical gain into your training, right? So if you've gone through like the base building period and you've gone through the period of like building that aerobic fitness, right? We're assuming that because, like, again, to build aerobic fitness, it's super easy. You're gradually building easy miles, gradually running at low intensity over a period of time to the point where, you know, you feel like you can go for long periods of time without feeling winded. That is really where you want to get to. And once you've like gone to that point where you feel like you're amply fit, then it's time to train for vertical way as well. Now, there's two ways that I really like to suggest adding vertical gain into your training. And this will depend also on like your time frame for training, also your history with any interval work, and as well as injury history and the whole nine yards from there. But there's two main ways to add in the vertical gain into your training. Now, the first way, which is the most accessible, and this, you know, applies to any training, training period or anything like that. And this is adding it either in your weekly runs or your long runs as well. And when I say weekly runs, I mean like your weekly easy runs, if you have them, or your just weekend, you know, non-interval speed work sessions, and your long runs, of course, is adding vertical gain into your training. Now, what's the best way to add in vertical gain to your training? Well, the best way to add in vertical gain to your training is by, again, avoiding one of those mistakes that I meant before, which is don't study the course, is study the course. And now what you want to do, and one of the best ways to mimic the amount of elevation gain that you are going to get in the race versus where you're at in your training right now, is you look at the elevation gain and loss, because again, you don't want to focus on just ignoring the downhill too. You look at the elevation gain and loss that's in your specific race. So let's just say, again, we'll use that 50 miler as an example here. 50 miler is, and we'll do the one that has the incline and then some flatter running, right? Incline and flatter running. And there's 10,000 feet of climbing and 10,000 feet of descending. Great. So if we look at that, then we want to all of a sudden go into our training and we want to say, okay, let's just say we have a 4-hour run scheduled for our long run this weekend. Now, again, just using just numbers here, like for the most part, like if you're looking at like elevation gain and things like that, you can almost estimate how many miles that will likely get you at a certain amount of elevation gain, right? So again, it's not going to be perfect, but you can estimate. So I would say the first thing you want to do is estimate how many miles you're going to get. Don't plan to do that much mileage if you were doing time-based training. If you're doing mileage-based training, obviously this makes it a little easier. Everyday Ultra fans know that, you know, a big proponent that I believe in, and also USCA, which is the gold standard of ultra running certification, and also the granddaddy, I shouldn't say granddaddy because he's young, but like the, I would say godfather, I don't know, but I guess when I think of godfather, I think of like Marlon Brando, who was old in that movie. Anyways, but the head honcho of ultra running coaching, Jason Koo, he suggests this as well, is time-based training. I'm not saying if you're doing mileage-based training, it's a bad thing, but you know, anyways, but you can estimate about how long it's going to be in terms of miles, but I wouldn't put it as like, that's what you're going to do for the run itself. But here's the reason why you want to kind of estimate that thing, is because for the miles that you're planning on getting in a given amount of period, assuming that you're correcting for elevation gain too, because like, you know, again, this will kind of make sense here, is look at the elevation gain and loss per mile in the race that you're training for, and try to mimic that same feet per mile average in your long run as well. So if we're using that 50 miler example with 10,000 feet of climbing and 10,000 feet of descending, that would mean, right? So we would take out our handy dandy calculator. I know at least I am because I'm not good at mental math. You would take out your calculator, you would type in your amount of gain or loss, and loss I should say, so 10,000 feet, and then you would divide it by the miles. So that would mean 200 feet of gain and loss per mile on average is what you want to target for your long run as well. And that way, right, so that way it's going to mimic very similar in terms of the gain and loss that you're going to get translated into miles as you would in the race as well. Now, the beauty of this strategy too is that it also leads, assuming that your time-based training or mileage-based training, if you're going by that, assuming that that training is being ramped up in a very, very safe way, which is dependent on people, but usually it's anywhere between 5 to 15% per week in terms of overall volume, depending on how much volume you're doing and everything like that. Like, there's a whole besides the case point. But the beauty of that is, like, when you do it by that strategy and you apply that to your runs in itself, that's going to, as you're increasing the volume, it is going to safely increase the vert proportionally to that volume as well. So that way you get that point where you're adding in volume or adding in vertical gain safely and not just like slapping in like a 10,000 vert week out of nowhere on a base of zero. Like, you can go ahead and add it in there as well. And even so, like, if you are starting at a base for zero, like 200 feet per mile is a pretty decent size, climbing amount. Like, I would even start with half of that if you're starting from a base of zero and then gradually build your way up with that until, like, you know, you feel like you're, you know, at a spot where, you know, you don't feel like you're completely wrecked or you're putting your body under duress as well. And just making sure that, like, you know, your vertical gain isn't going up by an absorbent amount. Is there a real big rule of thumb on this one? I wouldn't say not exactly, just because, like, if you're going from a base from zero and then you say, yeah, 10% gain, like, it's going to be tough because, you know, the 10% gain off of, let's just say zero, which would essentially be one, would, you know, increase to like 10 feet per mile, which is just ridiculous. So, hey everybody, just wanted to take a quick break in this episode because I partnered with a company recently that has just been a game changer when it comes to clothing and apparel that I'm wearing on my long runs. And the one thing that I get frustrated with when it comes to running gear or apparel in general is when it doesn't last long. Whether it rips, tears, or just wears away, it sucks to have to keep buying new stuff. Plus, doing that isn't sustainable for the planet. But I recently started trying this gear that lasts long, has a 5-year guarantee, is super comfortable, has extremely fun colors, which is so important, right? And helps to support clean water programs around the world. The gear is from John G, and you gotta check them out. They make high performance running apparel such as shorts, tanks, shirts, jackets, and more, all built to explore the world on the run. Not only do they have a 5-year guarantee where they will replace any product that wears away, but their stuff is super comfortable, breathable, and easy to move in, especially in the winter months when you're bundled up a ton. Plus, 2% of their sales go towards nonprofits working on viable clean water solutions, so it's a way to give back and feel good about where your money is going. They have super bright colors and artwork designed by talented artists all across the world, so you'll stand out on the trail, which is, like I said, one of the most important things. My favorite products have been the Transit Tech Short and the Run All Day Tee. I like the Transit Shorts because they're lightweight, easy to move on my runs, especially when I'm climbing hills or doing faster efforts, because they don't have a liner. And when you don't have a liner, I feel like you can move around a lot better when it comes to doing these faster efforts on the trail. And I love the Run All Day Tee because it feels like you're barely wearing anything out there, which keeps you really, really cool on a hot day and doesn't feel like you're overwhelmed on a cold day as well. So it feels like you're not wearing anything that's holding you down. So I 100% suggest you try out John G's clothing. And if you're looking to test drive it, you can get 10% off your order when you use the code EverydayUltra at checkout at johng.com. That's spelled JANJI.com. Or you can go to the link in the show notes directly. Use code EverydayUltra to get 10% off your order. And if you're rocking John G in your next adventure, let me know and hope you give them a shot. Go to johng.com and use code EverydayUltra. All right, everybody, let's get right back into this episode here. Again, like, you know, use your common sense on this one. It's there's not too much science, but the way to gradually increase vert in a safe way is to use that method when you are taking the feet per mile and then translating that into your safe volume increases, and that should get you into the way. And the way that you can scale that back if you're starting at a base of zero is just take down the number of your feet per mile a little bit. So instead of 200 feet per mile, you can go for, you know, 50 feet per mile to start, and then take that up to 100 feet per mile, and then take that up to 150 feet per mile, and then start to gradually increase that along the way. And then that will help as well. And then another way too is, instead of just doing it that way, you can also take, you know, if you're looking at your overall runs per week, you can say, hey, let's just say you're doing, you know, 5 runs per week. 3 of them are going to be, or let's just say 4 of them are going to be, you know, relatively easier runs, including your long run. And one of them is going to be an interval day. And the interval days, you're doing them on flats. But then the other 4 days, you know, you're focusing more on like the, you could focus more on incline. You can say, hey, I'm going to do the 200 feet per miles, but I'm going to start it out only on my one of my easy runs per week. Then I'm going to add it to 2 easy runs. Then I'm going to add it to my long run. And like, you can add it more so from a frequency perspective on that as well. The metric that you're going to really want to look at though is your total elevation gain per week. This is one of the reasons why I love Strava and why I love Training Peaks. Even if you're not on Strava for like the public face, it's good to like keep a note of that as well, just from like a training log perspective. But you get to see week by week like how much elevation gain you're getting in, and again, just keeping tabs on that to make sure that you're making there. Now, some warning signs that you might be going a little overboard on the incline training, by the way, is if your calves are just feeling absolutely smoked. And I'm not just saying just like a little bit tired or a little bit sore, like they might totally be, but like if your calves are like, you know, I'm saying like sharp pain, really, 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 really bad spot. Achilles is also acting up as well. Those are things you want to look out for, just because those are some of the muscles that are really being activated that aren't activated as much on flat running or downhill. So just know that those can be some warning signs to just definitely look out for. Also hips as well. Just be mindful of those things, like either getting a little niggles or things like that, that just might mean, you know, you're kind of like going a little bit over the edge as well. But if you follow the principles that I mentioned as well, you can also do that, because also too, it doesn't always mean that you're increasing, you know, volume or vertical gain disproportional to what your body can handle. It can also be a myriad out of other factors such as muscular imbalances, nutrition, whole bunch of stuff as well. But anyways, we're getting too deep down the rabbit hole on this, but that's how I would scale up vertical gain as well from that perspective. I know that was very, very lot of shit in there. So, hope that helped to explain all that. So that's how to gradually scale up vertical gain into your training into a safe way. Now, generally, where do I like to start with this? And this is kind of briefly mentioned before, so I'll kind of talk about it, you know, on here as well too, again, just to reiterate, is I would like start to drip it in, like by putting it in some easy runs at first and putting it on your long runs, but pretty much putting it on relatively easier runs to start. And this is actually a good time to like start to get this in when you're doing like an aerobic conditioning phase, where you're starting to add in incline, you know, a little bit more, in a base building period where you're just, you know, stacking up easy miles, stacking up the volume into there, you know, before you dive into, if you are focusing on a speed work session, into a speed work session as well. Because, and listen, you can have a whole training block, and this goes into, you know, how to run faster and like how to structure a training program and all that kind of stuff as well. And without getting too much into the nitty gritty on like how to craft like a training program and all that stuff as well. But for the most part, like if you are building up from scratch or a lower base, a lot of your, and you are relatively limited on time for training, pretty much most of your training is going to be easy endurance building training. And then you can add in the vertical incline in that matter as well. But let's just say you have a really good base, or you have a very long time to train for the ultra, and you do have time to focus on speed work, which again, that's, speed work is one of those nice to haves. It's not a must have when it comes to endurance training or training for an ultra marathon, right? Because as I mentioned before, like your main engine is the aerobic engine. Now, a great way to also get more out of your aerobic engine and just your overall fitness in general is to add in anaerobic work as well. Because think about it this way, like both the aerobic system and the anaerobic system are responsible for processing oxygen. And if you think about it too, on the aerobic system, the way that you essentially measure how much output that you're getting in your aerobic system is like seen as a percentage of your VO2 max. Now, generally, you want to be able to take more of your VO2 max over longer periods of time. And so when you think about the percentage of your VO2 max, you want that percentage to increase, which is increased by doing the which is increased by doing easy runs and building your aerobic base, right? So But what a lot of people don't recognize is that it's a two-part equation. You have the percentage part and then you have the VO2 max part. So always it's easier to increase that percentage part, and it's more specific to ultramarathoning when it comes to increasing your overall fitness and what you can do at your aerobic capacity. But you can also change your VO2 max, which gives a bigger base on there as well. And just to reiterate, VO2 max is just a fancy way of saying the metric that measures how well your body can process oxygen, right? So, and that's generally targeted by doing very, very intense work as well. So by increasing your VO2 max, that's where you can add in doing interval work and everything like that as well. So all that being said, like if you have put it into your training and you have done those things as well, like you can also add in speed work as a term of intervals, which are also a great way to incorporate climbing into your training while also increasing your fitness, assuming that you have a good enough base to do speed work and assuming that you have a long enough time frame to travel in it too. Now, generally, there's two types of interval structures that you can get into. And if you want to really get into the nitty gritty on interval structure, I did a podcast episode on how to run faster. That's the title of the podcast. And then there's other stuff in the title as well. But if you just search Everyday Ultra, how to run faster, this will teach you all about interval structure. But there's generally two types of structures that you can do. You can do short intervals or you can do long intervals. And even if you're not doing intervals, there is a workout that you can incorporate that isn't really an interval. It's more like kind of like a sufferfest that actually can prime your legs for a lot better training. And so I'll talk about that one too. But first, the first type of workout is the short intervals. And these are going to be way more intense efforts. And I like to measure these on a matter of rate of perceived effort. So what is your effort on a scale of 1 to 10? These are going to be intervals that you're going to perform at an 8 or a 9 on a scale of 10. So very, very intense stuff. And generally, these are going to be very short intervals. They're ranging anywhere between 30 seconds to 4 minutes on the work session, and you're going to have an equal work to rest ratio. So for example, a hill workout could be, you can be doing 8 sets of 1 minute up the hill at 8 to 9 RPE, and then 1 minute down the hill, or on a flat if you're doing it on a treadmill, at 2 to 3 RPE. And you have a warm up and cool down that's anywhere between 15 to 30 minutes before and after that as well. And you're doing that at 2 to 3 RPE, right? So that's like an example workout that you can do on the shorter stuff. Now, That's an example of short intervals. The example of long intervals are going to be longer duration intervals at a lower intensity. This is going to be targeting the lower end of your anaerobic system. So as a refresher again, right, you have the aerobic system and the anaerobic system. Your aerobic system, the RPE is going to be anywhere between 1 to 5, and then your anaerobic system is going to be anywhere between 6 to 10. And so for this one, right, so as we said before, the short intervals are targeting your high end anaerobic system, which is going to be mainly targeting your VO2 max, which is going to be 8 to 9. And then the shorter longer intervals are going to be targeting the lower end of the anaerobic side, which are going to be an RPE of 6 to 7. So this is more like a tempo effort, or when you hear people saying I'm running at threshold, this is essentially what they're referring to, because they're referring to your lactate threshold. We won't get too into the nitty gritties because we'll just really spiral into a rabbit hole. Again, really suggest listening to the Run Faster pod, or How to Run Faster podcast episode that I did. But anyways, these interval structures are going to be where you're going up the hill, and these are going to be work sessions from anywhere between 6 minutes. It could be going up to 20 minutes. 20 minutes up a hill is just brutal. But it can really turn you into a climbing monster. And then you would do a rest ratio at half that time as well. So if you're doing a rest ratio or work ratio at 10 minutes, then your rest period is going to be 5 minutes. And then you're going to have 15 to 30 minute cool down before and after at 2 to 3 RPE, like before with the short intervals. Now, how you structure these intervals itself, you want to look at total time at intensity. And basically your time and intensity is going to be calculated by the number of sets that you do times the number times the minutes of work that you're doing per session. So for that same workout I gave, the 8 sets of 1x1, you'll have 8 minutes time and intensity. For that thing that I gave in terms of the, in a workout that you would have, for example, for a long interval workout would be 3 sets of 8 minutes up the hill at 6 to 7 RPE, and then 4 minutes on down the hill or on flats at 2 to to three RPE. So in that case, it would be, I think I said 4x8, right? 4 times 8, which would be 32, and 32 minutes would be your time and intensity. Generally, you want your time and intensity for VO2 max workouts to be anywhere between 8 minutes to 24 minutes. And then how you range that is going to depend on like your skill with intervals, experience with intervals, all that stuff as well. Obviously, if you're just starting out with intervals, you're going to go on the low end of that. And then for the 6 to 7 long intervals, 6 to 7 RPE long intervals, you're going to look at a time and intensity, you know, anywhere between 16 minutes up to, you know, you can go up to 42, 45, even 50 minutes if you can really push it that far. But again, like you would scale that based on like your experience with speed work, where you're at in the training block, whole nine yards from that too. So that is going to be that as well. Now, the reason why these uphill intervals are so great is because it really, really also not only just improves your fitness, but from a climbing perspective, it really helps to develop the muscles needed to get up those hills itself. And so that is, yes. So of course, the overall fitness is being worked on when you're doing these intervals. But what's really, really important too to know is that like when you're moving uphill, like think about it, like, and this goes back to the question, like, is your lungs tiring out first or your legs? If you're running uphill at a faster intensity and you're really just getting that up there, that is going to build the musculoskeletal strength inside your legs. It's going to build muscle in your legs. It's going to build the strength. It's going to build the ability to, you know, output and have that in an area where your legs can really carry you further. Like that's actually going to increase the strength in your legs as well. And a lot of the times, like, and yes, it is also important to work on strength training. And I think it's a very, very important thing to do. But if I was looking at like strength training versus building strength doing uphill intervals or just uphill work in general, I would choose the uphill work mostly because it is literally the most specific thing that you are training for. Because if you are like running uphill and you're training for a race where you want to run uphill, then boom, it's like super specific. So that strength is super, super specific. Someone told me this one time, like from a strength coach, they're like, if you want to get better at doing a deadlift, then you got to be deadlifting, right? And so he's like, you know, yes, of course you can like squat and you can do, you know, you can do a bunch of other exercises, but like the best way you're going to get better at deadlifting is deadlifting. And so the best way you're going to get better at running uphill is, yes, like, you know, again, assuming that you're already fit to do so, is by running uphill and doing that specific stuff as well. Now, I'm not saying the strength training isn't necessary or the strength training shouldn't help, but generally, like, if I was looking at like what's going to be more bang for your buck, I'm going to say doing it on intervals is going to help as well. Now, if you aren't as experienced with interval training or you don't want to add in too much crazy speed work or you don't even want to worry about just putting intervals in, there's a really, really great workout that I learned from David and Megan Roche. And they call it treadmill doubles. And basically what it is like you do this as a double session, ideally on if you're already doing an intense or relatively harder workout that isn't a long run earlier in the day. And what you would do is later in the night, you would do a nice, you know, 10 minute warm up, 2 to 3 RPE on flat, just jogging it out. Then you would put the treadmill to a 15% grade, or I would say anywhere between a 10 to 15% grade. It doesn't have to be 15%, 10 to 15% grade, and then run up that hill at a 6 to 7 RPE. And basically just send it on there for 15 minutes. And what this does is it's, as you can see, it does follow a similar format to the long interval kind of stuff without actually having an interval in there. It's more like a tempo run kind of format, but this helps you to build the strength while also getting in some time and intensity that helps to build your overall anaerobic system as well. And it's a great, great mechanism to do. And it's something that I even keep into my routine, even when I'm out of a speed work phase and really working on just plain endurance. And it's a great thing to just keep in. And it's a good way to kind of keep it into your system if you are relatively newer to intervals, because like you don't have to be worrying about these sessions where you're doing, you know, 25 minutes time and intensity or anything of the such too. The cool thing too about speed work and intervals, and this is just a tangent on here, is that, you know, generally with interval work, like that can be a high risk for injury because you're increasing intensity, but going uphill actually decreases your chances for injury when you're doing interval work. And if you remember what I was mentioning before on like the impact between downhill running and flat running and uphill running is generally going to be the safest from a musculoskeletal standpoint. So because you're not radiating as much impact back into your body, doing the uphill interval or doing the intervals on an uphill, it's going to be a lot safer to do so speed work on the uphill. So even if an athlete is training for a flat race, I do always say to them, I said, if possible, do this on a slight to moderate incline for that exact reason, so they can also hedge their bets a little bit in terms of just being kinder on their body and then also so it recovers quicker as well too. So that was another way that you can add in some interval or incline training through intervals into your stuff to get better at it as well. Now, the last way to add in stuff into your training, and this is honestly a very, very important thing, I think for a lot of people where if you look at a specific race and you know that you're going to be doing a lot of hiking, and these are namely races where they're just like really fucking steep and it's going to be more efficient to hike than run, is practice the skill of hiking. So I'll give you an example. When I was first training for the Zion 100 miler, and the way that course is set up is there's a lot of flat sections, and then there's 10,000 feet of climbing, which isn't a lot over 100 miles, but the tricky thing is that like all the climbing is like very concentrated in like a few climbs. So like you'll be running flat for a while, and then all of a sudden you'll just be fucking sending it up a mountain, like really steep mountain for like, you know, a few miles, so to say. And you're going to be hiking up this because usually it's like some of those things are really, really steep. So in order to practice that, for me, what I did in my training was I would include specific hikes into my training where I would just be hiking uphill. And I think this is a very important thing to have in there because hiking is a very, very good skill to gain to get better at uphills, because the reality is sometimes you are going to ultimately need to hike, and it's going to help to conserve energy. And like, I know a lot of times many people have experienced this in ultra marathons. I know I have. Like, you see people running up the hill and then you're hiking up the hill, and then on the downhills you're either catching them or you pass them later in the race, because sometimes just running uphill just burns your engine way too much, and hiking helps you to conserve some energy as well. And the pace difference isn't even that much, right? Because you might be running up a hill at, say, 13 minute mile, and you're able to hike up a hill at 16 to 17 minute per mile while also giving out less energy output. Yeah, I'm going to be a fucking hiker all day in that scenario, if it means that I'm going to be in the game longer on and not fry out my engines. But the thing is with hiking, like, hiking is a skill. Like, I've seen people who are through hikers who, you know, can mash trail runners up a hill. The reason why that is because like they're just so good at hiking and they're so efficient with it and they're so good at it. And really with hiking in itself, it's one of those things where you get better at it the more you do it. The more you hike, the more you get better at it. If you incorporate like not just running into your training, but hiking, like specific hikes, that can be a great option to have in there as well. So you might just incorporate 1 or 2 days. I really only think it takes is just like 1 or 2 days to do so. 1 or 2 hikes. Really, one is really all you need. 2 is ideal. If you want to do it as many times as you can, that's cool too. But, you know, setting aside 1 or 2, and it doesn't have to be just hiking days. It can be you do a run in the morning and then you do a hike later in the day. Those can be times that you have like specific time where you're working on incline hiking. Now, the important thing is this is really more applicable towards like, you know, a lot of the stuff that's going to have, you know, a lot more hikeable sections, right? If you're going to have a lot of rolling hills, which is stuff that, you know, is going to be pretty runnable for the most part, maybe this doesn't apply to you. But if you're doing a race that's like a Zion 100, or that's like, you know, just an elevation profile where you're just going up and down and up and down, then yeah, you're probably going to want to incorporate something like this. And so, but incorporating, you know, anywhere between 1 hour, 2 hours, 3 hours of just hiking, just to practice out there, whatever, you know, can fit into your schedule without overdoing it in terms of volume, is going to be really, really important. And that's where you can practice your hiking efficiency. Now, what are some ways to practice hiking efficiency? One way is there's two different methods that I like to use and kind of like use interchangeably. So the first method is there's three methods, and three involves like a tool, which I'm sure you can probably guess of what I'm going to be getting at here, which is, spoiler alert, trekking poles. But anyways, if you don't have trekking poles and you want to just kind of, you know, test it out without the poles. It's a pretty common method that you see with a lot of people do, where you kind of like hunker down a little bit. You put your hands on your knees, or sorry, not on your knees, just above your knees on your quads. And when you're running up, you kind of like push down on your quads a little bit and bounce back up. And that just helps you to, you know, really like propel yourself a little bit more up these climbs, and also to just like, you know, keep your legs moving at a really, really efficient pace while also just like getting a little bit more propulsion up those climbs as well. So, like if you just like search like power hiking, or if you just search like ultra marathon competitions or something like that where people are going uphill, you'll likely see people doing this technique, hands on knees, they call them. But yeah, that's a technique that I use pretty well. It's pretty good too. If I find that like that's not jiving for me, or I want to switch it up, what I'll do is I'll actually like lean back a little bit more, and I will like press into my hips to hike, and like I call it hike with hips. And the reason why I like this is because sometimes like I feel like when if I'm breathing a little heavier than I'd like to, and I'm bent over a little bit, what happens is when you're bending over a little bit, sometimes that can put some pressure on your diaphragm, and your diaphragm can't get as much oxygen in that to really process it through. So if I'm breathing a little much, that's where I will kind of do hike with the hips. Like literally, and I'm doing it right now, you can't see me, but I will literally like tilt my hip back. And then I will like imagine that like I'm moving forward with like my hips, like the front of my hips. And that's where I'm hiking, like not my quads, like not like my calves, like just like with the hips. And I just kind of like do that mind muscle connection out there. It does feel really weird at first. It doesn't feel like normal at all. But I found that like when I do that, I feel like I breathe better, and I feel like I can move a lot quicker. Now, if my breathing's under control, and I usually will do the hands on knees thing, but usually like later into a race where I really need to like keep the breathing in check, then usually I'll lay off a bit on the diaphragm, and then I'll do the hike with the hips. And that really, really helps too. Now, option three, which is a really great option, is hiking poles. And I get the question all the time, should I have hiking poles or should I not? I always say, first and foremost, look at the course profile. If you're looking at the course profile of a 100-mile race, and there's one climb throughout, and basically, let's just say you have to carry the trekking poles the entire time, like I would not, and like the rest of the course is flat, assuming, or downhill, then probably a race you don't necessarily need poles on for most of the race, maybe just the climbs itself. Where poles really are beneficial is on like really steep incline. That's where poles are beneficial. On the flats, yes, like if you're in maybe like a 200-mile race or a, you know, 100-mile that you know is going to be a slog, yes, it can help to keep your body upright on the flats. Some people like it on the downhills as well. I'm a person that I don't like poles on the downhills, and I don't like poles as much on the flats. Like yes, a Cocodona, I might use them just to like, you know, keep my body a little bit more afloat and to hike a little bit more efficiently. But you don't always need them is what I'm saying. They're not a necessary thing. I would say poles are strongly recommended to use for hiking and climbing uphill, if your race has a lot of uphill gain in it too. And even if the race has like one or two sections that have concentrated uphills and you're able to just use the poles for like that section only, I would say go for it, because let me tell you, poles not only take the pressure off your legs, but they actually are also seen to increase the amount of oxygen that you're able to get through, because like your body isn't relying so much on just muscles to get up the hill, because like think about it, the poles are starting to take on some of the work as well. So like from an uphill perspective, poles are incredible. I remember for me, and this was very intentional, I didn't take poles when I raced Istria 100 and 10K. I think I was the only person out there without poles. And the reason why I just did that, I wanted to try and make it a little harder for myself. But there were so many people like passing me up the hills on the poles with using poles and looking like they're giving a lot less effort than I was, because those poles can take off a lot of pressure off your body. I think poles are a great tool to use if you're going to be using a race, or you're going to be racing a race that has a ton of incline, because they will help to take pressure off your legs. They will help you to breathe better out there, because you're going to be able to, you know, not use as much pressure onto your body. And two, they're just also a great way to just, you know, climb uphill a lot more efficiently. So I suggest using poles. Now, if you are going to use poles for your race, the best thing that I will say is practice using poles. And the reason why that is because like you are using a lot of like upper body strength when you are using poles, because like as you are moving the pole, you are like digging in with the force with your upper body, and that's requiring your upper body muscles to work in that scenario. And if you were to just use that on race day, your upper body can just get absolutely torched. So you just like you need to condition your legs by going uphill, you also need to condition your arms and your upper body to be able to use the poles to get you uphill as well. And the technique for poles, there's really like two techniques that I like to do. Is one is called like the skiing technique. So like if you see like cross country skiers, they kind of put like one pole out in front of the other and then just kind of like do that method where they're just kind of going one pole in front of the other, and you can go uphill and do that. And with each of those poles, you're doing a step and you're going left, right, left, and you're placing it in front of you, you're digging into the pole, and then you're pushing off of that, and then you're putting the next one down, left, put it down, push into it, and then come in. So you're kind of like going left, right, left, right, with the poles in there as well, and then moving accordingly to that. The other method is, I like to call it like the slalom method. I don't know, there's not like a word for it, but like, have you ever seen like where like the slalom skiers, they're like kind of, or like if you see like a person doing like a ski erg machine, right, where they're like taking both hands and they're just like pushing it behind them, right, or they're just like pushing down with both hands at the same time. That's another method that you can do. Is I like to use this for like aggressive uphill hiking, like if I'm really trying to muscle through a section. And that is like you just take both poles, put them in front of you, put them down at the same time, hoist your body up and walk into it, and then just keep kind of like hoisting up like that and just using the two poles down at the same time. I like to use that again for a little bit more aggressive of a climb, because you're kind of like using the force at both your arms at once and kind of doing, you know, a little bit more push in there. But for the most part on the standard, the left right is like a good little cruisy thing to do. So depending on where you are at in a race, depending on how much you need to push, depending on how much you're willing to push, you can alternate between the two techniques. And even so, I would say practice both of those techniques on your long runs, on your runs, anything like that, whenever you're using poles, just to have that as well. Now, you don't need to practice poles on every single long run, but I would say the more long runs that you practice on, if you plan to use them on the race, the better, just so you can really, really get familiar with those as well. But poles are a great way to increase your uphill efficiency as well. So those are tips on there as well. Now, last and certainly not least, the question listening from people who live in flat areas, they're like, hey, what do I do if I live in a flat area, but I'm training for Leadville 100? Or what do I do if I'm signed up for this very hilly mountainous ultra in Colorado, but I live in, you know, just a very, very flat area? I don't know. I was trying to think of a flat area off the top of my head. Texas, Florida, take your pick. So there is ways to do this. And I even actually have a client who I'm currently working with. I mentioned this before, and I'll bring it up again, but he's training for the Georgia Jewel 100, which is a very hilly race in Georgia, and he lives in Florida, which is very dead flat. And I've had athletes who train for Canyons 50K, which is actually happening tomorrow, and they live in Florida as well. And there's kind of two methods that you can really do to get better at climbing without having, you know, access to vertical, a lot of vertical mountains or gain or terrain near you as well. Now, the first method, and this is a method that is highly controversial, but let me tell you, is so effective. And it's one where I'm sure you're going to hear it first and you're going to be like, Joe, no, what the fuck? And then, but I'm telling you, it can become your best friend. And that is using our favorite deer, treadmill, if you have access to one. Yes, the treadmill is the ideal option to use when you are trying to train for a race that is very, very hilly and trying to get better at incline running if you are in a flat area. And the reason why that is because like you can really, really focus on the uphill stuff and really get that going like on a good groove for as long as you need to. Whereas method number two falls short in that, and I'll talk about what method number two is, but the treadmill is a really, really good option on there as well. So using the treadmill in shorter runs, intervals, or even doing like a part of a long run, like yes, you can do the whole long run on the treadmill if you want to. Listen, I have some clients do it. Kudos to them. That's amazing. If you want to do it, it's also a great mental practice as well to just like sit in the same spot for hours and hours on end. But if you wanted to do like 2 hour run outside and then 2 hours, you know, run on the treadmill and then, you know, just kind of do it from there, that is a great way to do it. But incorporating the treadmill into your training as the uphill efficiency maker in the scenario where you're flat is going to be one of your best bets to do so. Because again, you can control how long you go uphill, you can control the steepness, you can control like the terrain and all that stuff. And it's just a great way to practice this. And you can practice like running uphill on it, you can practice hiking uphill, you can practice all that stuff on there as well. I've seen some people practice with trekking poles on treadmills too. I've never personally done it, but I've seen that to be possible as well. So it is something you can practice. I would just be very, very careful with sticking that pole and, you know, on a moving belt. But I've seen people practice that. I don't know. It's an interesting thing. But yeah, that is one thing I would use. So use the treadmill to be your friend. Now, if you are listening to this and be like, I dread the treadmill, I will tell you this is the same for me. This is the same for a lot of my clients who are getting put on a treadmill as well. They usually say, after a few times, they actually starts to grow on them a little bit more. And I know that's true for me. Like, and I was starting to incorporate treadmills into my interval workouts. And a lot of people might be asking, hey, well, don't you live in Phoenix where there's mountains and stuff like that? Yes, but the thing is, a lot of the hills around me are very chunky and technical and rocky. And so for me, I wanted a little bit more smoother terrain where I can get more like running economy, because at the time I was training for Cane's 100K, and Cane's 100K is a very runnable course. So that's like another thing to think about too. If like all the, you know, inclines around you are just like rocky and rooted and just like really hard to get like a good turnover over, and you want to get better at like actually running uphill, the treadmill can even be good for you in whatever scenario you have as well. So just know that that's an option as well. But anywho, I was incorporating the treadmill into my interval workouts for that reason. And I was fucking dreading it because I hate the treadmill. And I was like, oh man, this is going to suck. This is going to blow. Like, I don't want to be on the treadmill. And I remember after two or three workouts, like I was actually stoked to get on the treadmill again. I was like stoked to get on the treadmill, stoked to like do the workouts. And I even get stoked when I do treadmill workouts nowadays. I still incorporate them into my training, you know, from a matter of convenience, because you can get really creative with how you mark up like a course, like with a treadmill, right? Because like it's hard to find like a near perfect, terrain to your course map. I mean, yes, you can usually find that, like, and that's always what I say is like when you're training for your race, like try and run a route that has very similar course profile dynamics to the one that you're racing at. But sometimes it's not always possible. And so for me, like I wanted to mimic the Canyons course as much as possible. So I went through and like, you know, pretty much program the workout inside of the treadmill, like in a way where, you know, I would have like hilly and then I would have flat and then I would have hilly and then I would have flat. And so that way it can mimic the course as much as possible. So that's like another great benefit of a treadmill, even if you live in a hilly area as well and you're looking for like the most ideal scenario to do it. The only downside with the treadmill, and this is not all treadmills, some treadmills do have downhill, which is like the really fancy treadmills, but most treadmills don't have the downhill ability, and you still want some downhill work as well. So that's a little bit of a con on the treadmill, but that's why we have option number two. And option number two is just trying to find a steep enough hill around you to do up and down hill repeats. But instead of doing hill repeats in the vein that I mentioned before, where you're doing them intense, you're doing them in a way that is fitting for a long run itself. And usually, chances are, there, even if you live in the flattest place, there might be a place that is at least a little bit steep of a hill where you can go through and do some hill repeats. And this is like what Tara Dower, who, again, top 10 ultra runner of the year, Colorado Trail FKT. She won Run Rabbit Run. I forgot to mention that before, and that's a very hilly race. And basically, she would go to this like landfill that was kind of near her, something like that. I don't know if it was a landfill or was some kind of area where there was like a little bit of a slight uphill, and she would just run up and down that uphill, up and down, up and down, up and down, up and down, over and over again. And that's how she would get not only her uphill climbing, but her downhill climbing as well. I know for some of my clients in Florida, they have bridges where like the bridges like actually elevate up, and you know, they'll go up and they'll run up the bridge and then they'll run down the bridge, up the bridge and then down the bridge. Again, like better than a treadmill because you're actually like moving and you're outside, but also you still get the same kind of monotony where you're going up and down the same place over and over again. So no matter what, if you live in a flat area, you get to prepare for the monotony. But I'm a very much kind of person where it's like, find the way that it's going to benefit your training by the thing that you're doing. And let me tell you, when you're training for an ultra marathon, you're running miles and miles and miles on end, getting used to the monotony is actually a very good skill, because you're going to be out there running mile after mile after mile after mile, and this tree is going to look the same as that tree, and this rock's going to look look the same as that rock, and you're like, what the hell? I've been out here for so long. Like, you need to learn how to also control the way that your brain handles monotony. So that's a good reframe to have on there. Is like, hey, I'm training to handle the monotony, and I'm training my climbing as well. So this is an absolute win-win scenario, right? So all that being said, little of a tangent there, is find something steep near you and where you can do hill repeats up and down. And you can do this in a variation of ways, similar with the treadmill as well, where you can do some workouts where it's like, hey, I'm just going to run 3 hours up and down the hill. When I was training for my first 50K, and the 50K had 7,000 feet of climbing, which is decent. It's a decent amount of climbing. And I lived in Appleton, Wisconsin, which is dead flat. I mean, like dead flat, like not a lot of mountains. So, but I had this like little bluff near me. It was like very, I think it like, climbed, just a few hundred feet in a matter of like, a little distance as well. But I remember like I did a training run where I just literally went up and down that thing for like 15 miles. And I was out there for hours and, just kind of going up and down this thing over and over again. And it was great. Like I felt like I was improving my climbing and also getting that downhill conditioning that I needed as well. And so it's kind of like one of those things where it's like, you got to get creative, but there are ways to do it out there. And one way that you can also do this too, is like, if you live in like, close to a major city or like within drivable distance, and that's like the benefit of it, is like, you can search like hill repeats in Dallas, Texas, or hill repeats in Phoenix, Arizona, and then, search that on Reddit, because chances are usually there's someone asking in that area being like, hey, does anyone do hill repeats in this area? And chances are, usually what I found, like I found like a lot of good spot in Phoenix if I wanted to do road hill repeats or things like that too, in that nature. Cause I even do them, if I'm trying to get a specific hill workout in, and maybe I don't want something too rocky, or maybe I want like a hill that's like the perfect thing. And I just like, don't want to do the treadmill. That is an option that I've used too before, is looking on Reddit as well. And obviously like, reaching out to your running community too can also give you a good insight as well. But the second option is just find something, even if it's just a little bit of steep, and just run up and down those things as well. And it's one of those things, right? Like if you're just like, well, that fucking sucks. Here's the thing that I would say is like, sometimes, you're in a situation where it's really tough. And, I'll give you an example too. Like even for me, I live in Phoenix, Arizona. In the summer here, it's so fucking hot. And the heat, because it's over 100 degrees, it actually diminishes your training performance. Like it actually shows like over time, if you run in this like scalding heat, like it actually does put a hindrance on your performance a little bit. So I basically go through every summer out here knowing that like a little bit of my running performance maybe not be maximized to my potential, but I pivot and I adapt and I deal with the cards and I wake up a little bit earlier and I, make sure to like use cooling mechanisms on my runs and things like that, that definitely take a little bit more time and definitely, take a little bit more planning on my end. Carry a lot of water as well. But that's like, I think that's the skill of ultra running, is just like making use of the cards you're dealt with and trying to figure out how to solve a problem. And so, it's always one, like, and listen, in an ideal scenario, like, yeah, you live in Colorado, you live in this and too, but most of the time we're not always in ideal scenarios. And I think like getting used to like saying like, okay, what are the cards that I'm dealt with and how can I play these cards in the right way? That's going to give me the best bang for my buck in terms of what I'm trying to do. And not only is that going to get you closer to where you need to be in the training, but it's just a good skill to develop. Like the best ultra runners are problem solvers. The ones who can solve on the fly, the one who like shit hits the fan and then all of a sudden you need to like troubleshoot things and think about like how to like, fix this blister, or how like, a shoe totally blows out of proportion. Like how can you run through like without this like shoe blowing out of proportion, or maybe your headlamp dies and you don't have a headlamp out there, right? There's a bunch of different shit that, you're going to have to figure out in an ultra. And I think, exercising that problem solving skill is a good thing to do if you live in an area that isn't like that too. And these are some options of ways to solve those problems out there, so you can be able to train into a hilly race without that as well. And I think it just comes down again to another belief, is like having the belief that you can figure anything out is one of the most powerful beliefs in the entire world. And if you truly believe that you can figure it out and get it done in your training, you're going to get it done. Now, let's just say for whatever reason, you don't have a treadmill and you don't have the area, you don't have, a hill to kind of do the things around. Then you're like, well, I'm kind of like shit out of luck here. Like I got nothing. I don't have a treadmill. I don't have a hill to run on. Like, what do I do in that scenario? Now, this is like honestly a very ideal option, but it's not always the most accessible because it does require you to travel. It requires you to, spend a little extra money. And that is like, you can go through your entire training block, like ideally, you know, running on flatter ground. And then what you can do is like go and fly out to ideally the course that you are going and training for, but I know it's not always possible, but a pretty hilly area, or driving out to a hilly area and do a training camp weekend. Because studies show that you only need a few like really long bouts of stimulus of a given effort to go out and really, really get this in. Now, again, you got to be careful with this because you don't want to, again, load up the volume and the climbing all in one weekend, like to really, really put it on. So generally, like to why on these training camp weekends, I usually like to have like a little bit of climbing here or there, but like not something where you're just slapping on like 10,000 feet or anything like that. You know, that's just something just keep in mind. But like if you go through and like do a training camp weekend and just get in some like decent climbing out there, nothing too crazy. Again, keeping it pretty tame, but like still getting in some climbing benefits. And this training camp, you know, can be anywhere between 2 to 3 days, but you're just getting that stimulus. You're getting that in there. And even if you do add in a lot of climbing, you can actually mitigate the effect of jumping up in terms of vertical gain by just doing more low intensity climbing, right? Because there's a lot of factors that can increase potential for injury. It's increasing volume, which could be a matter of, it's just time on feet, but it's also an increase in intensity. And so if you just like really take it like low intensity, hiking up the hills and all that stuff as well, that can help to mitigate the effect on that as well. Now, again, ideally, you know, you might be running on a treadmill or some hilly terrain to at least get some stuff in your legs before the training camp weekend. But going through a training camp weekend and having a little bit of stimulus in there can actually go a long way into ultimately getting you used to the climbing as well. And ideally doing this sometime in your peak week before the race, which could be anywhere between 2 to 3 weeks, depending on how long your taper period, can be extremely beneficial to do so as well. Or if you want to fly out to the race like a week before and just like get in some hikes or stuff like that, light hikes, right? Like nothing that's going to trash your legs or anything like that. That can be another good option. Now, the last option too, I should say, and this one's a little bit more accessible, but generally if you have options to this, then you most of the time have options to a treadmill, but that's just going to the gym, right? And focusing on a Stairmaster or focusing on doing step-ups or focusing on doing lunges. Those things can help, but they're not the most ideal. Yes, they help to build the muscles in your legs, but it's not as specific as the actual climbing specific stuff as well. So that's why I generally prefer the number one thing to do is putting it on your long runs. Number two would be doing a treadmill or doing like hill repeats somewhere. The third option is like flying somewhere and actually getting in the work on there as well. But the reason why I put that three is because it's not always, you know, accessible by everybody. And then the last thing I would do is like, you know, more like strength training specific stuff as well. The Stairmaster, I would say, is probably a little bit more specific because you are going uphill a little bit more. I like the treadmill a little more because it's much more natural for most courses you're going to be on, unless the course that you're going to go on has like a fuck ton of stairs onto it. I generally like the treadmill a little bit more just because it is more biomechanically specific to it as well. So I would say the Stairmaster is a good option that you can throw in every once in a while. But if you are really SOL and all you have is like weights and things that you can use and you don't have access to a treadmill, doing things like lunges, step-ups, squats, anything that's going to target the muscles in your legs that are going to help with climbing is going to be beneficial too. But I would never put that as option number one. I'm not saying you can't do those things. Like if you are able to do a mixture of all these things, fucking great. Like that is amazing. And like the good news is like if you have a lot of hills around you and you can incorporate the hill training and you want to incorporate the strength training on top of it, great work. That is awesome. It's just really hard to like say, like, I guess the question is like when people come to me and they're like, hey, like, should I run up hills or should I strength train in order to get better for hills? Like, I mean, the answer would be both, but if you had to pick one or the other, right, you had a gun to the head, like which one would you pick? I would pick the running up hills because like, again, like just like the deadlift example, you want to get better at deadlift, you deadlift, you want to get better at running up hills, run up hills. But the strength training can definitely help a little bit with the muscle work as well. The reason why it's not fully effective is because like it doesn't train the actual biomechanic motion of going uphill, and that efficiency piece, right? Like I mentioned before, you get better at hiking when you're hiking, you get better at running uphill when you're running uphill. Like you're not actually running. You're just like strengthening the muscles without actually like the running biomechanical motion. I'm not saying the stronger muscles wouldn't help because they 100% would, but you're not necessarily like treating the actual skill of going uphill as well. So, but if you have absolutely nothing on the line, that's going to be, you know, pretty much like your last resort effort. And if you wanted to just get some supplemental incline work and you had the time in your day to do so, man, by all means, go for it in strength training. I'm a big proponent of strength training. I love it. I think it's great. The only thing where I'm just saying here is just like, you know, when people want to focus on getting better as a climber, sometimes their first inclination is like, let me just like lift weights and make my muscles stronger that way. I'm more inclined to say like, climb more. Like, again, if you can strength train, fucking go ahead and do it. That should be primary option, right? So, hope that all makes sense and everything like that. But yeah, that is all about how to become a climbing monster. I hope this episode was beneficial for you. Obviously, I made this as in-depth, but also as accessible as I possibly could have. But I hope this episode has helped to give you the tools, the workouts, the strategies, how to craft in, how to be a better incline runner when you are out there, you know, training for your next mountain ultra. And if you have any other questions about this, please send me an email at everydayultrapodcast@gmail.com. Also, too, if you want to be coached for your next ultra, what's super cool is I'm bringing on more coaches onto the team. If you're already on the wait list, I will be sending out an email letting you know that you get first come, first serve option to the new coaches that are coming on. But if you would like to inquire about working with a coach that's fully trained by me, currently my personal roster is 100% full, but I'm adding on new coaches to take on new clients down the line to help you crush your next ultra, whether it is a mountainous ultra. I'm sure you're looking to improve your climbing if you're listening to this podcast. So if you are interested, so shoot me an email at everydayultrapodcast@gmail.com, and we would love to hear from you and work for you. But also feel free to reach out if you have any questions too. But thank you all for listening, my friends. I appreciate you. Go and get your climbing on. Be that billy goat, be that mountain goat. I don't know why I use goat twice. What's another animal that climbs? I don't know. All I can think about is goats, but go out there and be the goat of climbing. How about that? Anyways, my friends, I'm gonna go rip some dinner real quick. I got a week and a half until Cocodona, so we are counting down the days. We're getting it done, and I'm just really grateful you listen to this entire podcast. And remember, my friends, be a better endurance athlete every day. We'll see you real soon, and go out there and crush those hills, my friend. Take care.